Hi, this is Jesse from Last Stop This Song, and you're listening to CJLO 6090 AM in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. About 15 anti-war protesters gathered outside of the office for Member of Parliament Anna Ganey in NDG on Tuesday. This small protest was part of a larger national event where activists across the country urged their local MPs to vote in favor of Bill C-233, known as the No Loopholes Act, ending Canadians' arms shipments to the United States and Israel. Bill C-233 is a private member's bill introduced by NDP MP Jenny Kwan. It goes to a vote on February 26th. The bill is formally called an Act to Amend the Export and Import Permits Act. It seeks to tighten restrictions on shipping military goods to the United States, expand the definition of arms and weapons to include weaponry parts, and create more transparency around what Canada exports and where it goes. The Government of Canada maintains that it has not allowed arms shipments to Israel since January of 2024. However, Israeli import data and publicly available shipping records show imports described as military weaponry and parts and ammunition continue to flow into Israel, in particular through sea and airports in the United States. Here in NDG, Member of Parliament Anna Ganey has never responded to local activists about their concerns regarding Palestine. Her office would not respond to CJLO for comment on this protest. Here is one of the protest organizers, Kimri Gomri. She's the coordinator for World Beyond War Montreal.
We're here protesting nonviolently against a horrible, violent, murderous regime in, you know, and our country's complicity and compliance with that regime. So I think Anna Ganey's a Zionist, like some of our MPs are, and she has no problem with the genocide. But we have a problem with the genocide, and she's supposed to represent us.
Though the protest outside of MP Ganey's office was small, members from multiple different activist groups were present, including World Beyond War, the Palestinian Youth Movement, Vivre Palestine, and Independent Jewish Voices. Here is Scott Weinstein, a member of Independent Jewish Voices Canada, speaking at the demonstration.
A year ago, Canada, you know, seemed to conform to the popular opinion of Canadians to not send arms to Israel. But in fact, they were sending arms to Israel by sending them indirectly first to the United States, which then sent them to Israel. So there's a loophole that no arms go to the United States that would be destined for Israel. And we want people to pressure their MPs to vote for to close that loophole.
Bill C-233 goes to a vote on February 26th in Parliament. For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Utopia is on the horizon. I move to two steps closer, it moves two steps further away. I walk another 10 steps, and the horizon runs 10 steps further away. As much as I may walk, I'll never reach it. So what's the point of utopia? The point is this, to keep walking.
I think it's very important for us to be able to imagine a better future, because if that imagination doesn't exist, then we are not going to be building it.
You've got to have dreams you want to achieve, even if it doesn't end up that way. Shoot for the moon, you at least land in the stars.
Climate activism requires a critical assessment of the challenges we face, but it also needs an optimistic vision for what kind of world might be possible if we win. And we need to be able to believe in that world where we actually succeed.
Climate action is very serious and it's very important. And often at the end of the day, serious and important things are what we want to disengage from. I think solarpunk brings an interesting alternative to that, where something that we have fun with and that we enjoy consuming is also a form of activism.
We need a future where we can see ourselves living well, treating each other well, and treating the planet well.
We cannot have an ecologically healthy society without also addressing social stratification, colonialism, expropriation of wealth, in the ways that would necessarily lead us to a more socially equitable society as well.
Climate activism needs to be critical, but we also need to have a vision of futures where it's enjoyable. And I think solar punk narratives can bring us into a space where we can like keep that critical edge, but also retain this sense that like winning a better future is about having a better life. So we need to like hold on to gentleness and kindness and what kind of world nurtures those things alongside like everything that we're fighting against.
Solar punk, and I think the ideal world that it portrays, comes from an interesting place of an intersection between an ecologically sustainable world and a socially egalitarian world, and really speaks to the fact that these things are not separable. These things are inseparable.
This is what I see as kind of the political value and the importance of a kind of optimistic narrative of the type that solar punk is trying to offer. It's not to give us blueprints for the future, but sources of motivation, nourishment, and inspiration to continue to come back to the work and keep striving for a future we want and not just accept the kind of lousy future narratives that we've been promised. So I think of these stories as kind of anchor points that we set into an imagined future and then kind of try to pull ourselves toward. And the tension we feel between where we are and the kind of narrative space that these stories try to welcome us into is, I think, the kind of site for the cultivation of longing for a future world that we actually want and can campaign on. And that's a kind of world where we can live well with each other and with the planet.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our show, Towards a Common Horizon. We are a new show here on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm really excited to be chatting with you today. That's a bit better. Okay, we are working out some kinks because this is our first time. Ooh. And want to make sure that all the dials are right. So hopefully you can hear us a little bit better now. We are the Montreal chapter of a national group called Common Horizon, where we are building a mass movement of everyday people. We come together to take power away from the billionaire class and win solutions to the climate crisis that secure good jobs, address affordability, and ensure a dignified life for all. We have chapters across the country, but we're the first ones with a radio show. Yay! Every 2 weeks, we'll be here on Sundays at 8 p.m., so fortnightly, I suppose, chatting about all things climate and affordability, connecting the dots between systems of inequality and climate collapse, and shining light on solutions that can address the polycrises we face today. As a bit of an introduction to our show and what we do, we're going to chat a little bit about who we are and what inspired us to get involved. And this will lead us into our main topic today, which is climate optimism, drawing upon an event that we held last week on Solar Punk, which is what you heard just at the top of the hour. All of those kind of clips together were from our event and some of our lovely speakers. So featuring specifically the wonderful Stephen Nanasahamani and Sinead Newell McIntosh, who were both really wonderful presentators. They used participatory and imaginative exercises and 4 short film screenings. They took us to the world of solar punk, which is a genre tool to imagine what our future could look like, and that is in its eco-sociological harmony. So as you heard in the intro clip, so much of what the genre offers is an alternative to the often too lousy images of the future that are currently being offered by capitalism and its forces. But yeah, before we get too carried away, I'm Hope, and I'm joined today with my fellow member.
Hi, I'm Emma.
We're just gonna chat a little bit about Solar Punk, this event, and who we are and what we kind of
believe in, and your Sunday night with a little bit of climate optimism.
100%.
Yeah. So I know, Emma, you weren't able to come to the event, but I think this is a really nice way for you to maybe learn about what we did talk about and kind of be a good kind of audience member when you can ask questions, being like, well, what happened there, and like, what did you think about this and whatever, and also shed light on your own expertise, because I know you've thought a lot about these things too.
I loved even hearing the intro clip was so beautiful. They're both such, you know, eloquent folks, and lots of great thoughts from people who are at the event too about what it means to imagine a future that isn't bleak and isn't just full of death and destruction, which feels like so often the imagery that we are presented with. So I'm really excited to get into it with you this evening.
Awesome. And there's something that we often talk about when we're talking to new interested members or just people generally about climate is, we're a group of young people, young people asterisk. That's a lot of people in that category. But we understand how bad things are. Things are really bad right now in a lot of ways. And I think that, we're pretty past the education part of things in terms of, like, especially for young people, like, we're on the internet all the time, our brains are pretty fried, like, everyone kind of knows what's up now, unless, like, you're on, like, pretty dark corners of things, I think. And so I feel like people know that things are bad, but it's often, pretty paralyzing then. People feel pretty paralyzed, and I think as a climate group, it's our job to kind of offer and do the job that Solarpunk is offering to do in, like, the literary world, where Solarpunk is offering this tool to imagine alternatives to these futures that we're being sold and given right now. And I think we, as a climate group, as an advocacy group, are here to offer alternatives to how we live and how we live our lives and how we kind of can orient our lives towards organizing power and shifting power. I don't know. What do you think?
I totally agree that I think so much of, especially when we talk about the climate crisis, is, you know, your introduction to that is, okay, here is what the world could be if we do nothing, right? Here is what 1 degree of warming looks like. Here is what, you know, even when I was a kid, kind of first learning about the fact that climate change existed, throwback to when it was called global warming, and like acid rain, or like, you know, the sort of the focus is always, here are these catastrophic things that can happen if we don't do anything about it. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of our political moment has shown us that sort of warnings of what could be and what looks bad that we should try and prevent are actually much less motivating for people than working towards, like, a positive vision of the future. I think we've seen that in terms of lots of also sort of progressive politics, like trying to portray a vision of just, like, we have to avoid the worst case scenario. Obviously is important and sometimes really true, but it doesn't always actually get people to feel invested and connected and inspired and energized and all the things you actually need to build power. And so I think, that's something I love about Solarpunk as a genre, and I think about being part of Common Horizon and their vision, the kind of work that we try to do is give people something to, like, imagine and picture and touch and taste and feel that feels possible, that isn't horrifying and bad, like that actually feels like a good thing that can exist. And, you know, it doesn't have to be revolutionary. It can be revolutionary. But I think I feel that even every time we kind of spend time together as a chapter, I think even just, again, I really felt like a little tinge of it just listening to that clip at the beginning, like folks sharing kind of their optimism and their belief that the future can actually be good and not just bad, really, I think, is so, so valuable and easy to lose track of, but, like, essential. And we can never lose track of it. And so I think, often, you know, a book or a piece of media that kind of brings us back to that vision is often a really lovely place to kind of be grounded and feel like the work you're doing matters. And, you know, there are alternative futures that are out there.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited to talk a little bit more about the different resources and like books and films that we watched in the event. But before we get into that, let's do a little ad break and let's see if I can remember how to do this.
I believe in the future where this ad is going to play.
Okay.
Located in the heart of Little Burgundy, Universal Negro Improvement Association of Montreal presents Unity in the Community. Marcus Garvey once quoted, "A people without the knowledge of their history, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots." Located at 2741 Notre Dame West from February the 15th to March 15th, join us Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5 for a vibrant series celebrating the legacy and ongoing contributions of the Black community in Montreal. Hosted by Gordon Weeks and Joe Zamal, each event is designed to engage, educate, and inspire through storytelling, film, and live performance. Discover the rich history, learn from trailblazers, and connect with others passionate about cultural heritage and empowerment. Sunday, March the 1st at 3 p.m., the legendary Skipper Dean spills the tea. Come join the conversation and performance with Skipper Dean as he reminisces about Little Burgundy then and now. For more, check out UNIAMontreal334.com.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Sorry to break up your ad break, but this is Death of the Mid-Range, your future favorite NBA talk show. We help you start off your week right every Monday morning at 9 a.m., bringing you a diversity of episodes on the beautiful sport of basketball. All of this is, of course, on CJLO. We will see you there.
CJLO. You're listening to CJLO. Okay. We're back. Well, let's just take a little bit of time to introduce ourselves more. So you know that our names are Hope and Emma. But who are we? And who the heck is talking to you? Emma, do you want to go first?
Sure, yeah, I can kick it off. So my name's Emma. I'm a little bit new to Montreal, and actually Common Horizon has been a huge part of kind of my experience of the city. I feel like I have gotten to know Montreal through canvassing for Common Horizon, through going to Common Horizon events, meeting people. So it's actually been kind of the beautiful lens through which I've discovered many of the things that Montreal has to offer. And I think particularly why I feel really passionate about the work of Common Horizon and thinking about sort of optimism about the future in general is that I'm going to be a teacher. I'm in school to be a high school teacher. I'm doing my placement right now, so I'm working with young people every day and seeing kind of their perspectives on the world and how they're feeling about their sense of the future. And I think that, yeah, one of the really beautiful things about being a teenager that I love getting to see every single day is just like, yeah, this kind of fearlessness, this like immortality, like you're like, I cannot be stopped. I can do anything in the whole universe. Like everything is possible. The world is my oyster. And I love getting to be like in proximity to that and just see that like beautiful abundance of possibility. And I think a lot of people go through kind of this really cynical, you know, experience of becoming an adult and, you know, hitting up against things like having to, you know, pay your bills and your rent and having you go to the grocery store now and you're the one being like, oh my God, my groceries are so expensive. And, you know, you feel a lot more kind of constrained by the reality of the world. And obviously a lot of that's connected to our economic realities and the struggles that, you know, working people face in terms of, you know, what that looks like for us right now and the massive inequalities that are a huge part of the world that we live in right now. I think a lot of folks obviously have, like we kind of been talking about, have sort of been aware of the climate crisis, and just every year there's a new IPCC report that says we're closer and closer to doom. And I think it's really hard when you kind of get over that phase of being a young person, like a really young person, and into sort of being a working person and a person in the world. It's hard to keep hold of that sort of beautiful sense of possibility. And so for me, a lot of why I've really loved being involved in Common Horizon is it sort of reignited that spark for me a little bit in terms of seeing, you know, the folks in this city and across Canada who are working on making the world better for all of us, and who are willing to dedicate all kinds of time and hours and creativity and energy and to sort of, you know, doing our little chipping away, our little bits at making the world the kind of vision we want it to be, and figuring out what that looks like and how we get there. And so, yeah, I think that that sort of sense of hope is really core and beautiful and important. And yeah, I feel like the thing I've really loved about Common Horizon is how core that is to everything that we do. And again, I think hopefully that'll be reflected in our show today and many of our shows going forward. But yeah, I think being around young people really kind of core to why I care so much. You know, it's my future, but it's also obviously their future. And I, you know, love them so dearly and want that future to be really, really good for them. They deserve a beautiful, abundant, equal, you know, prosperous future. And it doesn't always feel like that's the trajectory that our world is on, but it doesn't mean that that's not possible or that we can't get there. So that's, yeah, that's kind of the things that I wanted to highlight.
Awesome. Yeah, this really reminds me of a kind of, I guess, slogan or something of sorts that I would use a lot during like my student politics days of my undergrad, which is just saying over and over again, it doesn't have to be this way. Mm. Because it doesn't. We're collectively making how we live right now at all times. You know, we often think that we're like so entangled, and we are entangled. I mean, that's true. We are entangled in many systems and kind of webs that are much bigger than us, but also at the end of the day, it is still us who like have the ultimate decision power of how those work. And I think, you know, at a very large scale, it feels impossible, but you kind of, as you narrow in that field, depth of field, it becomes more and more possible to kind of change and affect, where those powerful people decide to, shift their influence. And so, yeah, anyway, all that to say is I feel like I've been kind of thinking about power and how we can change it and how we can kind of move it around to more of the collective and more of the masses for a long time now. I am also kind of new to Montreal. I moved to do my master's here a year and a half ago, but I was in Halifax before and was, as I said, kind of involved in student organizing for a little bit, but hadn't always done climate stuff, like kind of dipped in and out of climate. I feel like a lot of people were involved in climate big in 2019 as the big crest happened. But then after 2019, the obvious answer is 2020, which we all know what happened then, and everything kind of dampened after that. And I think a lot about actually like the kind of political imagination that was really ruined during that time, especially for people who are our age. So I think we're dating ourselves, I suppose, but like mid to late 20s. Like if you were coming up during 2019 when the climate movement was at its height, it was a really optimistic time. And it finally, like, you know, think about like the timeline, like 2016, the Paris Agreement happened, and then 2019, or like Greta Thunberg is like cresting, she's striking for the climate every Friday, like we're all like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then 2019 happens, there's like global movements, there's like the biggest strikes ever, young people are surging, everyone's like, great, we're saved for young people, or because young people are rising up. And then COVID happens, which was obviously like devastating, and that all paused. But then we saw this like wild use of power that all these governments were using, and they were like, okay, fine, we're gonna actually use our power and do the right thing and shut down and try to like do things that create collective health the conditions that like, yeah, that allow like the most vulnerable to be protected. And so we all like witnessed these powers being used for the collective good. And then like 6 months later, they were like, just kidding. So I feel like what that did to the kind of imagination of young people in terms of being able to see that these things are possible and these governments and, you know, whatever antagonists we want to like point the finger at with any given issue, like we see that when they want to, they can use their power to do what they want to do, and sometimes that's protecting people, but oftentimes it's not. And I think like that probably was quite disillusioning for a lot of people. And I think that, yeah, when you get into that period of just like realizing that things are possible and things don't have to be this way, but also so many people are making it so that they are bad, it's quite demoralizing and really like disenchanting. And especially as young people, you know, young people as us in our 20s, or, you know, Emma's students who are like teenagers, it's not a really optimistic time to move forward. There's so many other crises going on that, you know, are more immediate concerns maybe that people find difficult to think, you know, beyond and want to think about these larger questions of climate and these, you know, when you bring in climate, you bring in like the larger systems at play, which I think, again, as we were saying, like people kind of know, but it's also really scary to engage with because then, you know, it's quite world shattering. You're like, okay, yeah, I can't pay for groceries, but what do you mean that means that actually it's because, you know, it feels almost conspiratorial. Like, what do you mean that means that, like, it's because, you know, everyone in the world wants oil and, you know, there's wars happening that makes my groceries more expensive? Like, that feels pretty, like, hard to face as just an individual person. And I think, again, this is what Common Horizon can offer, is a way to think about these ideas and think about like the kind of implicit knowledge that we all have that things are bad and we don't really know like how to do anything about it. But it offers not only ways forward, like true ways forward, but also just like people to commiserate with and people to share community with and share comfort with. I'm like excited to talk a little bit more about that later in the hour, of like the idea of comfort and what that, like what that looks like, what that kind of like dignified life looks like as we try to strive for more like just and equitable worlds that also are, you know, in ecological harmony with us. Where does the kind of standard of living take us? Where does what kind of do we all deserve to have? And I think, yeah, with Common Horizon, at least I think we can all affirm to each other that we deserve to have love and community and friendship and happiness despite and in spite of these like really scary things that we're actually all facing pretty head on in the work that we're doing. Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna play a little clip right now from the event. Sinead was talking about this thing called like a fear control response. I'll let them speak for themselves and we can talk a little bit about that. But it just feels quite relevant here. Let me see. Ooh, let's see if this will play.
So there's this mechanism in psychology known as the fear control response, where when there's a fearful stimulus in front of us, we have two options. We can either deal with the fearful thing or we can deal with the fear. And the reason that we choose one of these paths over the other is often determined by the presence of an alternative. So in terms of climate action, what this means is that we can see that we're on a dangerous path right now. We can see that the path is leading us to a future that we don't want. But if we don't see an alternative future as well, what we're going to do is we're going to take that fear and we're going to compartmentalize it. And we're not going to think about it. And we're going to decide that maybe the future isn't that scary after all. But when you have an alternative vision of the future, when you think about how things could be made better and what you want from a future, and that is different to everyone, but when you give yourself permission to think about that and to enjoy that, it gives us that alternative that allows us to, instead of pushing down the fear, fight the fearful thing, which is climate change.
Emma, what do you think about that?
Yeah, Sinead is such a beautiful, beautiful genius. Yeah, I really appreciate, I mean, I think a couple things really come to my mind hearing that, and I think it's that it feels like so much of the political moment we live in right now is so dictated by fear. Like, it feels like a lot of folks, you know, sort of reactionary tendencies and our, you know, our lots of folks draw to like authoritarianism and the right is so guided by this really deep fear of what the future is going to look like and being, you know, wanting to have like sort of strong men, and authoritarianism is such a response based in fear. And so I think that Sinead is so right in saying that basically you know, there are, if we let sort of the fear be the thing we're trying to resolve, whether that's by sort of compartmentalizing that fear or kind of leaning into it in, you know, harmful ways, I think that's, that really resonates with me. That's so real. And I think, yeah, a lot of us who, that's not our vision of the future. We do not want necessarily the authoritarian, you know, fascist kind of version of what our future could be. It does feel like the alternative is much less clear and much less, you know, illustrated for us. And so, I definitely feel like, yeah, myself and a lot of folks I know do try to just sort of, you know, you get through the day, you're like, I'm afraid, but I'm going to just keep trucking and hope for the best and wake up and have my cup of coffee and go to work. And, you know, it does feel like you have to just compartmentalize to keep existing. And I think people feel sometimes kind of ashamed of, but it's a very reasonable way to respond, as Sinead explains, when you don't necessarily know what else to do, when you don't have another path to take. And so I think that, yeah, people, you know, that's a real thing. And I think actually, I really appreciate what you said before, Hope, about how much COVID really changed people's understanding of not only what's possible, but also I think of who their community is. Like, I think there was such an insular, you know, looking inward, obviously for very good, important reasons in terms of making sure we weren't spreading disease, and, you know, making sure to keep our bubbles really tight and all those kinds of things. But I think people a lot really kind of turn inward in terms of, you know, what their sort of circle of obligation is, who matters to them, what that future looks like for them based on those people. And so I think that, yeah, something that I have found is really maybe sometimes challenging, but really important, I think, of this sort of post-COVID portion of our lives, like coming out of the pandemic at least, and, you know, what the world looks like now, 6 years after 2020, is thinking about envisioning that future with everyone. Like, I think we, you know, we all got really used to thinking about our lives in a pretty small context and the people around us being a very small kind of group. But now when we think about those futures and those alternatives, what does that look like when we can all be a part of it and we can build that together and we can, you know, it's a collective effort to create an alternative that we can envision. And I think, yeah, something Sinead picked up on that I think is important is, like, you know, it doesn't have to look exactly the same. It doesn't have to be perfectly aligned with one another. But starting to share some of those imaginings and starting to talk about what that means to us and what's important to us in community, I think is really important. This is a slight tangent, but I feel like I read this, like, Lucy Dacus interview where she was like, go to the party. Like, you're sad and you feel really bad and you don't want to go to the party, but you should go to the party. And I actually think that is, like, low-key kind of solar punk. Like, it's like, you have to go to the party. Like, you have to show up. You have to have the hope. You have to, like, feel the dream, let the dream live. Even when you're like, I literally don't know if I can get through this. Like, that is the only way through is together. And it's at the party. And it's at the solar punk event. And it's at the, you know, the potluck. It's at the whatever that looks like for you and your community. Like, that's where it's happening. So, yeah, I think the other thing I would just sort of end on there is, like, you know, the creatings of these alternatives are, like, it's an active process. It requires, like, building them, envisioning them in community and together. And I think, yeah, again, that's something that I think we really strive to do, is give people a place to kind of access some of that community and the ways to build, you know, in that way, for sure.
Go to the party. Honestly, that's so real. And I think, I'm thinking about how it actually is so important, because, again, as people who were raised on the internet, we maybe don't have as much of a, you know, we're talking about alternatives. We literally don't know what that alternative is like to live without the internet, and we don't know what it's like to live without like profit making hungry hands just, like, wanting to claw our eyes out at all times. And, like, going to the party is what people would do anyway. Like, yeah, they were bored or they felt bad or they were, like, you know, feeling tired. But you couldn't – the alternative for them was, like, I don't know, like, take up a new hobby. But it wasn't just, like, doom scrolling on their phone. Like, maybe I'm romanticizing, like, a non-internet, like – life. I'm, like, aging myself that way, but, like, I don't know, I think it's true though. And I think, like, more than ever right now, I think, like, one of our generation and, like, younger generation's biggest challenges, and, like, a huge challenge, is the fact that the internet and not the internet as a whole, but, like, specifically these, like, mega profit corporations like Meta and, like, I guess X or, like, whatever, all of these, like, you know, profit-making, like, social media, they make money off of our time. They make money off of literally pacifying us. That is their job, and they're doing it very, very, very well. And so the idea of, you know, fine, we can get our information from them if, you know, gun to a head, fine. Yes, we'll learn about the activism event on your social media, but then go to the event, you know, go to the party, go to see your friend's art show, go see the things that are being shown and shared through the channels. Don't let them continue to pacify you to the point where you're actually very antisocial, you know? We're a very antisocial, we're at a very antisocial time in our lives. And I think that's really hard to imagine a better future if we're literally stuck in our rooms. That's a horrible future. That's so sad. Of course we're all depressed if we're, like, you know, like, yeah, like, of course we're all depressed because we're literally at home, like, with all the tools telling us that the world is bad, because it's literally profitable to say the world is bad. It, like, think about that. Like, like, we're on our phones and we're getting sucked in and we're feeling horrible. And it's just a, like, a positive feedback loop. And if you actually leave your house and go and hang out with your friends or make friends or come to events that we put on, like Common Horizon,
so true.
It just, you know, we don't even have to be besties, but then we probably will become besties. Like, I feel like I met Emma only if, like, I don't know, I'm here a few months ago, and I really love them. And I feel like, you know, it's just, it's nice to be able to meet people who, you know, have the same values. And even if you don't even know much about them, you know that you at your core just want something better. And hasn't that always been what brings people together, is just the knowledge that what brings you together and what you have in common is that you want a better life, you know? And, like, that's what optimism is. Like, the, like, we can be as ironic as a generation as possible and try to detach and, like, do little accents to try to detach from scary things, you know? We can, like, do all of this. But at the core, if we are investing our time into, you know, whatever it might be, your friends, as simple as your friends, as simple as a meal, as simple as anything, that is an indication that you want something to be good. You want something to be better, ideally, than it was before. And, you know, it's scary to invest in things because, you know, again, we're in a finance world. So everyone's like, okay, well, what's my payback then? And maybe we won't see that payback. I'm okay if we don't see payback in our lifetime, as long as it's in someone's lifetime, you know? I mean, I feel like as much as I want, like, public transit for everyone and everywhere, like, immediately, I'm also okay with at least if something gets done for, like, the next generation. I'm like, hell yeah, I can't wait for the next generation to have high-speed rail between Windsor and Quebec, but maybe not until I'm 50, but hell yeah, if I'm 50, I'll be on that train, you know? Like, it's okay if it doesn't happen immediately, even though it should. Obviously it should. Doesn't mean that we also pause those efforts, but I just think, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, you know, it's investment doesn't need to be immediate. And I think we've been taught, especially because we're living within this, like, capitalist frameworks, we're living within these capitalist metrics of progress and success, where success looks like an immediate turnaround and, like, always infinite growth. And we know that that's just not sustainable. And I think we just need to remember that we actually are the ones who create those metrics for ourselves. You know, like, we're not going to, no one's going around being like, how many friends did you make this year? Okay. In Q4, how many friends did you make? It's like, oh my God, that's just not how it works. And these things take time. And, like, if we just, you know, are a little bit more organic about how we live our lives and trust that we actually know best, and recenter away from, you know, these capitalist, consumerist, like, ways of thinking, and towards more collective, imaginative, generative spaces than like Common Horizon, then at least it's a place to start, you know? It doesn't mean that, like, everything's going to be better magically, but at least you're not alone in your room, like, on your phone. At the end of the day, yeah. Like, that's baseline where we're at. At least you're just not rotting on your phone. And that's a huge win. Like, I'll take any win we can get. And, yeah.
Yeah. No, truly. I do think it's, like, yeah, I love your bit about how, you know, you don't have to be the one to ride the train. Like, that's such a classic old, like, you know, a wise man, like, plants the tree that he will never sit in the shade of the tree, but the future people will. And, yeah, I think that, like, investing, like, imagining the future, even if you won't be the one to live in it, is so, that's such a beautiful, beautiful thing. I also would say, I think actually one of the best sort of, like, slow weaning off of the doom scroll that I have discovered in 2026 is actually just engaging with, like, longer form content. And again, solarpunk, like, being able to read, like, a beautiful solarpunk book or even watch, like, a sort of solarpunk movie, you know, to like, rather than whipping through, like, a billion reels in an hour, actually kind of letting yourself exist in a space of a piece of media and feel it and get into it a little bit. And then, you know, ideally discuss it with people that you know, the ideal situation. But yeah, I think even giving us ourselves the space to, like, be in those pieces of media, allow them to actually, like, take up space in our life, even though, yeah, you could like, optimize your time, I guess, in some other insane way, and quantify that, you know. Like, I would say one of the most depressing things that I've recently discovered is this, like, app where it'll, like, summarize books for you so you don't have to read them. Like, it's like, 5-minute, like, blurbs that are like, it's not, it's like, now you've read the book. I'm like, it's the end, like, we're done, like, wrap it up, let's go home. Like, it's but except, see, that's literally, I literally am like, then it's over, but it's not over, like, we have to be, it can't be over, you know. But yeah, wow, I literally just felt it in myself being like, it's over, like, we cannot, how can we possibly go from here? But there are actually a million beautiful places we can go from here. We just need to put in the work to think about them and envision them, and then, you know, slowly make them real. But that's hard to do by yourself in your room, so you gotta have a place to start with it.
And okay, so yeah, back to, this is really reminding me, like, so solarpunk, we played a little definition at the beginning of the show, but it's a literary kind of emerging genre. It's still very kind of in its nascent stage, but it's drawing upon, like, the traditions of cyberpunk, and, like, steampunk, where it's imagining, like, a socio-ecological future in harmony, but specifically using, like, renewable energy sources as its, like, predominant energy force, I suppose. So, like, you know, picture these kind of utopic idyllic, like, all I can think of is, like, The Sims 4 Eco Living Pack, but, like, picture, like, just, like, cutesy little, you know, windmills, geothermal stuff, you know, like, solar panels and everything, whatever. It's, you know, it depends on the quality of the media being produced. There's some criticisms in terms of, like, it's unclear sometimes, like, the process of the production of those energy forces still, because obviously we know that these things are never, you know, completely impactless. But I think, like, we were talking a lot in the event about how some of the films actually and some of the content that we were reviewing as a kind of intro to solarpunk was actually very technology heavy and very in this kind of train of thought that is a little bit, you know, techno-capitalist, in that, like, thinking of, well, you know, so long as we just build X, Y, and Z that is, like, you know, this technology or this, you know, energy source or whatever, that's, like, will be perfect somehow, or, like, we'll check this box or whatever, like, this will get us out of the hole. And I think, you know, like, that app that you were just talking about, the book app, Emma, it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, capitalism is always going to be creating these, like, efficiency bots, you know, these, like, little technology fixes that mean nothing. But, you know, we obviously have internalized a lot of that habit in the way that we imagine the futures that we could have. So obviously, you know, some people who are creating these solar punk narratives are also relying on those same tropes of, okay, well, what if we just build like this thing that can make clouds that have rain, or like, you know, what if we just have, you know, do like a kind of geoengineering thing, or, you know, this, that, or the other. And I think that it's really important that we remember what an alternative really can be. You know, we don't actually have to follow the same templates. Like, we can resist those, you know, those habits that have already been created, that are really based in profit making, and, you know, remember and like return to the habits that we've relied upon for millennia, which is, you know, land-based relationships and reciprocity in a lot of different ways. So reciprocity with obviously the land, but with each other and all of these things, and like with ourselves even. Like, I really think like those book apps and like things like that, like though, like any sort of like, God, I mean, that's a whole other rant, but it just like feels so self-hating. It feels so like hollowing out of oneself and such a lack of trust in oneself. Like, I really think that like we need to be able to imagine not only a collective future, but also a future that we ourselves deserve, you know? So this book that was also talked a little bit in the event, called A Psalm for the Wild Built, one of the kind of main theses at the end of it, I'd say, talks a little bit about how, you know, we can all be, you know, at the top of our game, like, we can be really happy in our work, we can be really happy with each other, da, 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 da. But we all are still craving these comforts at the end of the day. And what does it look like to, like, be comfortable and, like, be able to, like, have the energy and be able to, like, take care of ourselves, to be able to withstand just daily life, you know, and withstand the kind of toils of like, human existence, you know, and the burden of consciousness, but, you know, just like general, like, you know, we're all still seeking out these kind of comforts at the end of the day. And I think what fills your cup is the kind of easy way to say it, like, what fills your cup at the end of the day to make sure that you can
literally, because he's a tea monk who so fills true. People's cups. That's very beautiful.
So true. That's a great point. And I think, like, that's, I think, so what, like, simultaneously we need to ask ourselves, like, What are the kind of futures that we want to imagine for ourselves, but what fills our cup to be able to push for those futures and have the energy to continue to push for those futures? And I think, you know, groups like Common Horizon, for me at least, really are some places that help fill my cup to be able to, you know, feel like I'm doing this not on my own, and feel like I get to meet people and become friends with people and be in community with people who want to do this too and will have my back when I get tired, and then I know that I can do the same too. You know, there's like mini reciprocity circles within that too. I don't know. Yeah, what do you think?
Totally. Yeah, I think that is it is all about where you can find that connection. Again, I think, you know, going to the party, yeah, the character in Psalm for a Wild Built, excellent book, would recommend. It's really short and beautiful too. If you're, even if you're not a big reader, you're like, I haven't read a book in a long time, you could crush this one. It's lovely. It's
so
like a beautiful
crushable.
Sweet treat. Yeah, a lot of the characters' experience is like having tea with people. Like, they come. It's also, yeah, it's interesting. I don't think there's like a breakdown of like who pays for the tea, which is kind of amazing. Like, the tea is just there. There is tea.
Well, it's also like slightly based in religion, so maybe it's a little.
Oh, true.
There is like a bit of a theology element. Anyway.
Yeah, but very cool. Like, obviously, tea is such a unifying thing for many folks across many different cultures in terms of what it means to share a cup of tea with someone. And it's true, that is so central to the fulfillment that the character gets for a lot of the parts of the book. And, you know, that's not the only thing that they need to fill their cup ultimately. But I think, you're so right that, like, thinking about, again, imagining what is possible for the future of the world, but also what is possible for your future, like who you are and what you want to be. I think that's, again, something I love about working with teenagers, is they're just like, I'm going to be a rock star. You know, they still have a little bit of that kind of crazy, beautiful ambition. And I think that that often gets kind of taken out of us in terms of what we feel like we are capable of. And it's so easy to retreat and to grow smaller and, you know, all of those things, and the world kind of tries to do that to us sometimes. But yeah, finding your equivalent of your beautiful cup of tea with a pal, and yeah, again, whatever that is for you, I think it doesn't have to be, you know, the party. It can be many, many versions of that. But I totally agree that Common Horizon has been that for me, and that having, yeah, folks that you feel understand the futures you are building together and are kind of walking alongside you in that is a really powerful thing. And if you feel like you maybe haven't found those folks for yourself yet, you absolutely will. If you just got to keep looking for them.
On that note, we're going to go to a little ad break.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Do you love hip-hop and R&B? Is your Monday afternoon lacking groove? I'm DJ Samuel D. Roberts, and I got you covered. Listen to my show, Whip Appeal. I'll be playing hip-hop bangers, R&B slow jams, and everything in between from Canada and around the globe to groove up your Monday afternoon. Listen to Whip Appeal, Mondays at 3 p.m. CJLO 1690 AM.
Okay, you are listening back to our show, Towards a Common Horizon. Wow, this hour has gone by so fast. This is our first show. I think it's going, hopefully, you think it's going well. We're excited. I think
we're pumped.
Yeah, we think it's going well. Before we kind of do some final words too, I'm going to play one last recording from the show, from our friend Haley, talking a little bit about the event and kind of what Common Horizon also can offer. We've been yapping a lot about Common Horizon around it, but this is a little bit more direct, I suppose. Let's see. Slow day. Okay.
Yeah, this event was so exciting for, I think, like a Common Horizon event, because I think, you know, if we just say, like, come to an organizing meeting, you know, that's a really intimidating space, and people just, like, don't know, they don't understand the contours of what that looks like, they don't know how to show up to it, so they're not going to come. So I think, like, I'm really excited about the, like, intersection of, like, culture and fun as an on-ramp to organizing, as this is, like, a thing that people can, like, I'm just going to show up, and I'm going to maybe learn some interesting ideas, and then we, like, create this inspiring space where we're talking about future possibilities, we're talking about a better world, we're talking about hope, and it, like, perfectly primes people to be like, well, maybe I could be involved in, like, fighting for that. And so, yeah, I'm really excited about this, like, partnership that we had tonight of, yeah, creating something that was, like, accessible for new people. And then when I sent that laptop around, I think, like, pretty much every single person signed up. So, you know, we'll see if people are ready to take the next step into organizing. But I think, you know, stuff like this, I think we're kind of, like, proving the point of solar punk, of, like, having hopeful futures. And, yeah, definitely watching some of those videos, especially the last one, of just, like, just seeing something that is, like, different and futuristic but good and feels good to look at. Like, I was like, yeah, that's a world I want to be part of fighting for. You know, often, like, in culture and things, we think about, like, one single person being a hero, and, you know, sometimes it exists in fiction, whatever. And so what I think instead with Common Horizon we're offering is, like, a bunch of people taking small actions can be heroes together, and, like, have real change together. And so we want it to be a space that's really, you know, accessible for people who have maybe never, you know, gotten into organizing before, absolutely terrified by the idea of, like, you know, yelling into a mic at a protest. Like, that is not their bag. And saying, like, let's think about, like, all the other different things that you could do. Like, are you good at hosting parties? Are you a good cook? Are you good at welcoming people? Are you killer on spreadsheets? Do you want to just do data entry? Like, just so many different things that people, like, have the skill set to do can feed into organizing work. And I think sometimes it gets like totally flattened into media and sort of just like one sort of like angry protester stereotype. But actually, you know, there's so many different roles that we have to offer. And I think, yeah, our goal is really to create a space that's like accessible, where people aren't coming in feeling quizzed, feeling like they have to have all the answers. And it's actually a space where they can like learn and grow and get the skills. Yeah.
Do you feel like you've learned and grown and learned the skills?
Oh, I've been learning and growing. No, I definitely think, we can vouch. What Haley said is so true. Like, Common Horizon is a super, accessible, inclusive place, and love that there is kind of a spot for everyone. I, like, the very first Common Horizon event I was involved in, I was, like, a game show host. Like, I had a fake mustache on. I was like doing like a little, like I love a little bit, and they were like, we love a little bit. Like, it's you know, there really is, I think, a space for kind of whatever things you think you bring to your community. Your community can look like Common Horizon, and it's it doesn't have to be too much more complicated than that.
So true. I'm just like, don't want to bring up too much more in this last like 4 minutes, but. I'm looking at our notes and just want to highlight again this really beautiful thing that Stevie said about solar punk, but also, I mean, this, you know, fill in the blank in terms of like climate activism or anything kind of giving you these paths for alternatives, giving us an anchor to like along the horizon that we kind of sink down and, you know, tie a rope to, and we can use them to pull us towards that future that we want. And whatever tension that we feel on that rope between us and that goal is where the work needs to be done, you know? Mm-hmm. So that can be on a really large scale, that can be on a really, you know, short-term scale. But I think that imagery was really helpful to me, and I thought it was, like, quite beautiful. Just thinking about, you know, I mean, we're called Common Horizon. The imagery was very, like, fitting as well. But, you know, looking towards the future, thinking about, you know, what could it be? Where is it now? But where, you know, what could it be? And how can I, you know, resolve that? And where do I fit in realizing the future that I want? You know, if we keep on saying, it doesn't have to be this way. Okay, fine. It doesn't have to be this way. But what are we going to do about it, I think, is the natural next question. And I think that's where, you know, Sinead's fear complex comes in too. Okay, what are we going to do about it? If there's no alternative that's given, we decide to compartmentalize, we decide to shut down, and we decide to, you know, scroll and doom scroll and just try to forget about it and be pacified, you know? But if we face it head on, and we decide to, you know, yeah, honestly face it, then I think that's where the work is. And the question of like, well, what can we do? What can we, like, I feel like that's like constantly the question that we're asked as, this group, what can we do? I think we can decide those solutions together, and many people have done, and we're lucky to follow in their footsteps and carry out their legacies and carry out their lessons that they've learned to implement the futures that previous generations have imagined and that we want to collectively imagine together now in the present.
Yeah, we'd love if you you come imagine with us and alongside us. We'll be here, like Hope said at the beginning, every second Sunday, so we'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'd also love for you to get involved with Common Horizon in other ways. If you want to hear from us, you can follow us on Instagram. Our handle is chcmtl_. We'd love to hear from you there. Feel free to send us a message, reach out, see what we're posting. But we'd love to connect with you. There is space in the community for all, and we need folks to imagine alongside us and with us about what this future is going to look like. So we'd love to connect.
Sweet. Wow, the time ticks by, and this last hour or last minute is so awkward. I don't know. Yeah, final words too is just like, again, we're a group that really cares both about climate but also affordability. We really care about making sure that the future that we build is accessible to all, is just to all, and inclusive to everyone. And yeah, making sure that we don't leave anyone behind ever. Because again, it doesn't have to be that way. And it's being sold to us as a inevitability, and it's fully within our power to refuse and to say, you know what? No, I don't want that, actually. And I want the future that could be always, and work towards that. So come hang out with us. It's really fun. And yeah, have a great evening. Have a great Sunday, and rest of your February. See you in March.
So true. Happy Year of the Fire Horse. Let's freaking go.
Happy Year of the Fire Horse. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.